Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Megan Kamrick. The coronavirus pandemic has shut down performance venues and music festivals around New Mexico and the country. That's left many musicians with canceled shows and tours and struggling to connect with fans and make money. However, there may be a ray of hope with the new federal coronavirus relief bill recently passed by Congress, which includes $15 billion for live venues. This morning, we talk with musicians and promoters about the importance of live music, even in these difficult times. And we want to hear from you. Tell us why music is important in your life. What are you doing to fill that void? If you're a musician, how are you adapting? Are you streaming performances? What is it like to make music without fans present? And in light of the violent attempt to overturn the results of the presidential election yesterday, there's a chance our show might get cut short for special coverage from NPR. If that happens, you can find this full episode posted online at KUNM.org and on our two-week archive. As of this morning, both House and Senate have confirmed President-elect Biden's win. If there are any other updates to the situation in D.C., we'll bring them to you during the show. My first guest this morning is Neil Copperman, founder of Amp Concerts. It's one of the biggest independent producers of live music in New Mexico and is one of the producers behind Global Kirky, an annual celebration of world music and culture. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning, Megan.
Your bread and butter is live events and live music. What has this past year been like for you?
Well, it's been really frustrating. I mean, like everybody trapped by the pandemic, everybody's affected. But obviously, our livelihood has pretty much been completely shut down, put on hold, kind of made unworkable in the normal way that we work.
I see that things are going on all the time, though, with AMP. How have you adapted?
Well, we come up with new ways to do work. It's something, as soon as the pandemic started, I thought, boy, people are gonna be stuck at home. I mean, none of us had any idea it would last as long as it has. But I realized very quickly that people would be kind of trapped at home, at least for a couple of weeks or months, and would need some form of entertainment and connection to the rest of the community. So we actually did our last show was during the governor's announcement, you know, on March 12th that limited events. And then our first stream was on March 20th. So we just started doing live streaming events almost immediately.
You guys have also did some driveway concerts over the summer. You even did drive-in concerts.
Yeah, we after we started live streaming, we started thinking of other ways that we could do things, and we did some video projects. We did a nice series called Postcards from Santa Fe. We did an art competition that we called Art as Anybody's. That was a really great community program, and some of my favorite things were the socially distanced neighborhood block parties, where we had artists perform in their driveway or front yard, and the only people invited were the people who lived on the block, and they all sat in their yards and houses and porches and watched the music. And it provided a really nice sense of community. And then we streamed those events so that, you know, people all over could watch. But for the artists and the people who could be there, it was really special. We thought of them as kind of helping the artists make a gift to their neighborhood.
And what has the pandemic been like for you in terms of keeping revenue coming in and also paying musicians?
Well, not surprisingly, that's been kind of a nightmare. Our revenue during the pandemic, our gross is about 12 or 13% of what our gross was last year. Mm. So we've just done a fraction of the work. We cut our staff costs, our salaries, and of course the bulk of our cost comes from producing events. So when we're not producing events, those costs go away too. So there is a balance mm-hmm. there between the money not coming in and the money not going out. But the money's not going out, you know, that's money that we paid to a lot of people. So that's artists, that's crew and labor and tech people and local companies that provide support infrastructure. So it's a lot of people that stay afloat from people like us who, you know, when we stop doing these events and paying people, it impacts all of them.
Mm-hmm. We already have a number of callers. I want to go to Tom. He's in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I'm also known as Tom McDougall on Facebook, just so if people want to get in touch with me. But so most of all, I miss playing live with my friends and my colleagues more than anything, and almost as much going out dancing and listening to my favorite local bands like Baracutanga and Le Chalunatique, Noé Jesús Santos. Neil is doing a great, great job. Last time I got to hear Baracutanga was the drive-in concert up at the Hippodrome in Santa Fe. Thanks, Neil, for that. So I am a classical musician. I play horn, known as French horn, in the United States. And I also do Celtic eclectic music. One of the bands I founded with Harlow Pinson, Saoirse, is still going. So I've tried supporting my musician friends in every way I can by streaming concerts. A couple of them I'm supporting through Patreon, Tarka, which Neil has brought a number of times down from Colorado. Keela, my favorite band in the world, an Irish world music band. Baracutanga and Noé Jesús Santos. So I'm trying to support them as much as I can and listen to the live concerts they do. And I hope K&M listeners, I'm sure they are doing that also.
How are you supporting yourself if you can't be out doing music?
I was really lucky. I could have gone bankrupt in April just trying to live on a tiny APS retirement and some substitute teaching, but I happened 2.5 weeks before the shutdown to be talked into taking a long-term substitute teaching assignment at Trace Vulcanis Community School. And so, and then I was surprised to find out that I would get paid through the end of the school year. And then during the summer, I was delighted to find out I was eligible for unemployment. And for the 7 weeks with the federal supplement, I made way more than I ever made at the top pay level as an APS counselor,
which
is a sad commentary on our economy and our politics. So I've survived.
Mm-hmm.
I canceled all my Romancing the Horn concert series that does classical and some world music through this year. I hope to start up again in January and apply for some grants. January of 2022.
Yeah.
So I've been really fortunate. I'm taking lessons with the third horn player in the Berlin Philharmonic online, who's becoming a good friend.
That's cool.
Who actually is American and is now having to retire at his age of 65. So it's been very good for me in other ways. And I feel very fortunate. And as much as I can, I'm trying to support my fellow musicians who are having a much, much harder time than I am.
Well, I want to get to some other callers, Tom, but I really appreciate you calling in. Thank you so much. We also have Stephanie calling in. She's from the Santa Fe Symphony and is planning a virtual concert series. Hello, Stephanie.
Hi, good morning, Megan. Thanks for having me on.
Sure. So tell us, what is this virtual concert series you guys will be doing?
Okay, well, we've already done a fall virtual series, and that was quite a very whirlwind and exciting collaboration. The Santa Fe Symphony is quite unique as an orchestra in that the musicians are involved in leading artistic decisions. And together with our wonderful board, we basically created this fall virtual series. None of us had ever done it before. And our wonderful executive director, Daniel Krupe, found a great production company, and we made 5 video concerts. Only one of them is still up. But the concerts were not full orchestra because of the health restrictions, you know, for gatherings.
Mm-hmm.
They were chamber music combinations involving orchestra members, filmed at iconic locations like Ghost Ranch. We were amazed. We created something that none of us had ever done before. And we were able to keep musicians working, which was great. And we're going to create a spring series as well, a virtual series, with the support of our board. And those concerts are going to be filmed at Meow Wolf, the International Folk Art, and the Museum of International Folk Art, New Mexico Museum of Art, the School for Advanced Research that has a beautiful campus, Casa Rondeña Winery here in Albuquerque, and also at the Lenzic. But we will see, you know, how the health emergency will shape those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And go forward with the support not only of the Santa Fe Symphony, but with our local union, who's helping us with safety protocols. It's as a musician myself, I would definitely echo a lot of what Tom just said. I got into virtual teaching online a few years ago. So there's that. It's different. Not quite the same. Just
yeah.
Like listening to virtual concerts for our audience is also different. I would say, in answer to your question about what is it like for us to not have that audience interaction, it's different.
Yes.
I mean, I don't want to attach any judgment to it, but we know that we're reaching people. And it is also very exciting to interact with our colleagues in the Santa Fe Symphony,
yeah,
even if it is at a safe distance. But one of the benefits of going virtual is that we've reached over 11,000 viewers from 18 countries, which, I mean, when I joined the Santa Fe Symphony, I had no idea that I would be playing for that kind of an audience.
Yeah.
So that's really exciting.
Well, I appreciate you calling in, Stephanie. I mean, I'm grateful that people are also finding ways to be innovative in this. We have to go to break in a few minutes, but I wanted to go back to Neil from Amp Concerts. Neil, I mean, I don't want to, be more optimistic than I should be, but crises often bring innovation, and you've certainly found that. Is this a, you know, do you think this will bring a permanent change in live music?
I think there will be some changes that come from this. As both Stephanie and Tom mentioned, people have found solace and activity and support in a virtual world, and that's not going away. The strength of those connections on virtual, they don't replace the live experience that we all long for, but they can complement it. And when the live experience comes back, I expect that we will continue to see some of those positive elements of the virtual remain too. The opportunity to take lessons from musicians abroad, you know, the opportunity to arrange Q&As and, you know, question and answer sessions with artists, the opportunities to allow people to experience shows in some form when they can't otherwise, maybe because the show is sold out or, you know, they just have conflicts. We were doing a little bit of live streaming from shows beforehand and would get some of that kind of feedback, like, oh, I couldn't afford a sitter, or, you know, I couldn't get to the show in time, but I got home and I could watch, you know, the last hour, you know. So so we know that kind of interest is there. And I think those kind of opportunities will continue in the future and complement what people do in person.
Well, we need to go to a quick break. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick, and we're talking about musicians in the pandemic. We will be right back.
The Rothstein Donatelli Law Firm is committed to supporting KUNM, where the law firm's criminal practice can help clients petition state courts to permanently remove public records related to criminal charges and certain convictions. RothsteinLaw.com.
Support comes from El Vecino Restaurants in Albuquerque and Santa Fe. Open for patio dining and carryout Sunday through Thursday, 11 till 8. Friday and Saturday, 11 till 9. Delivery, carryout, and curbside service available. ElVecino.com.
The last part of this piece makes me remember the feeling of being a kid, having a blast, tumbling down a hill. I'm Fred Child. Let's get carried away, shall we? Dances of Galanta by Zoltán Kodály on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
If you're just joining us, this is Let's Talk.
Rostine Donatelli.
If you're just joining us, this is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick, and we're taking your calls. How have you found live music in the pandemic? Why is live music important to you? You can reach us at 277-5866. And we have on the line right now Ellen from Albuquerque. And good morning, Ellen. I understand you are a frustrated choir member. I, too, am a frustrated choir member. I'm glad you could join us this morning.
Yeah, exactly. Happy New Year to you. Me and my husband both were, because we belong to a church, and we can't do singing in the church. And right now, and not only that, but our church has gone online. But the advantage to that is that we can sing right here at home all we want. But, you know,
it's not quite the same, though, is it?
No, it's not the same, but, you know, you do what you got to do to stay healthy and safe, and I get that. So hopefully and prayerfully, now we're slated to go back to the church in mid-February, providing health, but we'll see how that goes.
Well, I know. I mean, we know that. Unfortunately, singing together inside is a great way to spread the virus. So I felt the loss a lot at Christmas that I couldn't be singing songs in a choir with my fellow churchgoers and also another choir I was in. So I hear you.
it's a super spreader waiting to happen. But, you know, we do what we got to do. Fortunately, there's hope on the horizon. Vaccines are being circulated. You know, my stepbrother is getting his first shot today. So this is, you know, we're there's hope on the way.
Well, thank you for calling, Ellen. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and hopefully we'll have a better year this year.
Let's hope so. Joining us now by phone is David Feldberg, a violinist who performs regularly with Chatter ABQ. For years, Chatter has held a live event each Sunday morning with live classical music and spoken word. They also hold events at the Albuquerque Museum and other venues. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Megan. Thanks for having me here.
Thanks for being here. As a classical musician, you play with orchestras all over northern New Mexico. What has this past year in the pandemic been like for you as a musician? What do you miss about those live in-person performances?
There's really nothing like the live in-person performance. And, being in an orchestra, you know, our whole business is predicated on large groups of people coming together and that shared experience, not only the audience coming here with the musicians, but, you know, having an orchestra on stage, you know, that's a super spreader event if the safety hasn't, you know, been worked out. So it's been really interesting, and I definitely miss it. And I miss the camaraderie and, miss being with those people. You don't realize it until you haven't had it for a long time. Mm-hmm. What that thrill is like.
Chatter has done some streaming events this year and some in conjunction with Neil's organization, Amp Concerts. What have those been like?
Pretty good. You know, we're trying to be really safe about it. And when the governor says you can't have more than five people gathered, we'll have four people plus a camera person, you know, and they're interesting. And we've been getting some nice feedback from them. It's for us, it's, a lot of it is just a way to keep us in the public eye. And so we've been alternating live streams and with recorded archival performances that we've done. And so we're just kind of keeping those going and keeping our finger on the pulse of what's happening. And we're trying to, you know, being outdoors obviously is the safest, but in the winter is not great. But we're looking at some possible outdoor opportunities at the end of April if the vaccine maybe takes hold and things get a little safer. But we, you know, we are following the guidelines as much as possible.
Chatter events tend to have a really dedicated audience and venues that feel pretty intimate compared to a big concert hall. Why is that experience of performing for a group of regular attendees important to you as an artist?
Boy, I mean, it's a real high. The communication of a smaller audience and a smaller group is pretty extraordinary. The energy that you feel coming from the audience and they feel the energy from you, it's incredibly symbiotic, I believe. I hope that's the word,
yeah. The
right word. But, you know, there's nothing really like the live performance. You know, when Stephanie called a few minutes ago from Santa Fe Symphony, Santa Fe Symphony also did something called one-on-one concerts, where they would get a Santa Fe Symphony musician to perform for one audience member, you know, I think about 10 or 15 feet apart, for 20 minutes. And I did one of those back in the fall. And so I had one person, and they rotated one person every 10 minutes, and I played for them. I could tell the response from them, it's like they haven't had anything to eat for a long, long time. And it was amazing. The live experience, there's really nothing quite like hearing an acoustic instrument vibrating in real space, in real time. I just got the sense that they missed it so much, the live aspect of it.
I believe that, Neil, you can correct me, or David, during these events, you also ask for donations for the artists. How is that compared to ticketed events in terms of revenue and being able to pay the artists?
It's definitely different. You know, we actually, Chatter, I know at least we ask for donations, but we don't. It's not a paper service. It's just a donated thing. And, you know, it's difficult because sometimes the experience is not quite like the live. You're listening to a performance. You know, possibly with a lot of subtleties on a little iPhone speaker or computer speaker. And so, you know, part of this is trying to make that experience as nice as possible, but it's slightly limited in that sense. And we've gotten, you know, we have such a wonderful fan base at Chatter and support base. And, you know, they're keeping the donations alive, and they're keeping the interest, and they're, you know, very excited to come back to our performances whenever it gets possible.
And has it hampered or helped your creativity this year?
it's definitely had me do some more creative things. We've had to be very creative, obviously, with camera work, and you know, it's for me personally, I've gotten to do some projects that I would not have normally had time to do during a busy music schedule. In fact, I'm recording something up on Friday. It's a 1 hour long piece for solo violin and soprano by the Hungarian composer Kurtag, and it's huge. And I don't think I would have been able to overcome the challenges, you know, working so much. So it's been a different experience, but you know, yeah, there are ways to be creative.
Well, David, thank you so much for coming and joining us this morning. Appreciate your input. Thank you. And thanks for keeping Chatter going.
Thank you.
Joining me now by phone is musician Lara Manzanares, a singer-songwriter from northern New Mexico, and Tracy Whitney. She is a musician, a commissioner with the New Mexico Music Commission, and president of Musicians Association of Albuquerque, Local 618 of the American Federation of Musicians. Lara, thanks for joining us this morning. You are a singer-songwriter used to doing a lot of live shows. What did you do this past year when those weren't possible?
Hi, Megan. Thanks for having me. That's a really good question.
And I know you do other things, too. You are an artist and a weaver.
I do a lot of things. But to ask, it's like, okay, there's the whole list of other things. and where do I start? You know, I've been doing some, of course, virtual online stuff as everyone has. Songwriting has been has been there. I can't say that songwriting has been happening more than any other time, though, necessarily, because, you know, as a singer-songwriter, you're kind of always working on something, and that has continued to be the case through this time. There's just been a lot more online engagement, I guess you could say. I really miss seeing people, because any musician will say, you know, and as a singer-songwriter as well, the singing to people and experiencing that special relationship that folks have with your music, that's coming from you, you know, that's coming from your soul in a way. It's been difficult to capture the same thing through digital, but I've also been very surprised, and in a good way, by the generosity and the engagement of folks, even though it is via online or through sending, you know, stuff through the mail or that kind of thing. So I've been busier than I thought I would be, much busier than I thought I would be at the beginning of the pandemic. It was sort of a like, oh my goodness, what's going to mm-hmm. happen? But I've been pleasantly surprised by the resilience of the audience, by the resilience of myself and other musicians that I've seen online. There's a lot of people just kind of got to make your own shows, you know, if you can't go out and play. And I used to do that before I really sang a lot on stages. I was always a busker mm-hmm. Back in when I lived in San Francisco. And even before then, in high school, I started out singing at farmers markets. You just kind of... So that kind of thinking, I think, I've had to sort of resurrect it in a way, but in a different space. That sort of like, well, okay, there's not the same things happening that are usual, so I'm just going to have to be creative and figure out some way to do it myself.
I wanted to bring in a caller we have who, Michael, is also a musician. He's in Albuquerque and has been finding new ways to make music. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Meg. Yeah, should say that it kind of worked out for us in a strange way, because initially, we have a band here, a local band here, and we lost our previous guitar player right around pandemic time, as well as all the gigs that we had lined up for the next few months and here in Colorado. And we used that time to break in our new guitar player playing outside when the weather is nice all spring, summer, and fall. And so what I want, we had two opportunities of virtual concerts or e-concerts, shall we say. And one of them comes from the St. Stephen's United Methodist Church. They have a weekly stone ground, solid ground coffee house on Saturdays. And we did a concert for them back in the summer. And, you know, actually got paid a little money for it. And the other thing, which we just did on January 2nd, is this great venue called Quarantine Happy Hour, which is a national, actually international organization started by some guys on the West Coast. And they do daily free concerts on Facebook and from... Well, 6:30 Mountain Time, and they have people from all over the country. I saw a friend of mine from Japan play a couple weeks ago on that, and it's cool because people, you know, can comment, you know, say, you know, hey, that was really great. Woo woo, you suck, whatever. You know, and
I wanted to ask you and Laura that because what is it like in virtual concerts? Because you're not with people, but they can be in a chat window or they could be there and leave, right?
Well, that's been an interesting experience for sure. it's fun in many ways because you can see people interacting, you know, while you're playing. Sometimes it can be a little distracting because there's a screen, you know, that you're kind of monitoring if you can while you're playing. And so it's very different in that way. When I've played live with, you know, in a room with people, that's one big difference is they don't usually say something while I'm singing the song, you know.
Right.
And that does happen in virtual concerts. And I understand it's just a different dynamic, but it is kind of interesting to be playing and then see people like, quote unquote, like talking, you know, sending messages and positive ones for the most part, you know, or requesting that I sing a song or just saying hi. So that the chatter, like while the music is going on is, I won't say it's bad. It's just different. It's very interesting and engaging and the interactions with the audience are different in that way.
Yeah.
It's hard to not be able to see them. And then also, one thing that I've found for myself, I don't know, other musicians may have had this experience or not, in the corner of the screen on depending which application you're using, it sometimes tells you the count of how many people are watching. And so that can be nice because you're like, okay, you know, someone's watching, I have an audience of sorts, you know, but then it also sometimes is like I don't want to be paying attention to the number, but it's there. And I said, I'm just going to have to cover it because when you're online, and I know this because I've, you know, attended other online events, you show up as a little number in the corner. And then if you are online watching the show and then you have to do something, somebody calls you on the phone or something and you leave the thing for a little while, then the number on the screen, it goes down one, you know. So as a musician, I have had the experience a couple of times of being like, oh, okay, there's 10 people or whatever. And then I sing the song and then it's like, oh, now there's 8. Like, did they just have to go do something else, or did they just scroll on, or like, did it have something to do with the song? So there's like that little seed of doubt, which probably doesn't mean anything.
It's easy to put a story to that real fast, isn't it?
Yeah. It's easier to kind of get into your head and during the online things, because you're just there with the camera, you know, that human interaction is, it can be difficult. So it's funny, but it's also fun. It's also fun. And it's caused, I think, some hopefully personal growth in that respect, because you're kind of having to talk to yourself a lot and kind of like, I don't know. Yeah. Just go into a space inside of yourself that maybe you wouldn't normally have to deal with.
Yeah.
There were people around. And so I you know, I think that might be not be a negative experience. I think it might help, you know, if we confront that and learn how to deal with it. I think it'll help our performances and our creativity ultimately.
We have to go to break in just about a minute, but I'm guessing it's a big learning curve for you, Lara and Neil. You had to help musicians with this, like video, lighting.
Yeah, definitely. That's huge. I don't know how much time we have to talk about that. So before the break, but I'll just say on my part, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to make it, you know, look and sound really nice. It's a person can just set up an iPhone in front and go. And that's also valid. You know, there's a lot of folks, that's really empowering and that's really great. Mm-hmm. But
if you want
to go to the next level, that's it can be challenging and a lot of work. Yeah.
Well, Lara, thank you for joining us this morning, and we got to go to break, but I really appreciate you being up this early to talk with us and share your experiences. And we are going to, this is Let's Talk New Mexico. We'll talk more in a minute about music in the pandemic. We just have to take a quick break here on 89.9 KUNM.
Among the books by Native authors published in 2020, there were children's books about water protectors and res dogs. And there were fictional thrillers about crimes on a reservation. On the next Native America Calling, we'll talk with two literature experts about which books made it to the top of their best of lists. We hope you can join us.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, we take you to Los Angeles, a city that sits on the largest urban oil field in the country. The story of one young Latina who decides to take on the powerful oil industry.
I feel like they don't see me as the threat, but I know that isn't true, and they'll just have to find that out on their own.
That's next time on Latino USA.
That's Latino USA, Monday mornings at 8 a.m. on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. We are taking your calls this morning as we talk about, or we talk with musicians and others involved in bringing you live music. It's one of the biggest shifts we have had to make in the pandemic. What do we lose by not seeing live music in our community? And how can we make sure it continues to thrive or even just survive until the time we can all come together in person once more? Call us at 277-5866. And joining me right now is Tracy Whitney. She's a musician, a commissioner with the New Mexico Music Commission. She's president of a Musicians Association of Albuquerque, Local 618. Tracy, how have the members of your union been affected by the pandemic, and how have you been trying to help them?
Good morning, Megan, and thanks for having me. What a shift that's happened since yesterday. I first want to acknowledge that we had a really, really bad experience in our nation yesterday, and it's been weighing heavy on me even as I woke up this morning. And
yeah,
part of that
definitely.
Is probably because I'm a union member and I'm a collective, you mm-hmm. know, like the Borg.
Oh, no, that's not a good collective.
Yeah, what happens to one happens to all of us. So, you know, it's not mm-hmm. easy for me to separate today from what happened yesterday.
Of course, of course.
How this has affected my musicians, and I was happy to hear David Feldberg and Stephanie on your call this morning. They are members of my union. How this has affected us is that all of these musicians are out of work. You know, I have 170 members here at Local 618, and they're the New Mexico Philharmonic, Santa Fe Symphony, Santa Fe Opera musicians. And so we've had so far, you know, like everybody else, an entire year of lost music, lost wages. And when you're a symphonic musician and you're playing at that level and you lose your gigs, that's what you do, right? So it's not like I'm a jazz musician, and I'm really fortunate to gig a lot. And I've lost like a third to half of my income not being able to perform. But when you're playing, when you're a symphonic musician, and a lot of times it's the majority of your income, that is a huge blow. It's been a really our industry has been rocked by this pandemic.
You're also a new commissioner on the New Mexico State Music Commission. Do you have a sense of how that commission's moving forward to support musicians and live venues?
Well, we haven't had our first. We're having our first meeting next week. So, once again, as a collective, we're getting together to begin to plan what we're going to do. You know, until there's a vaccine and until people are inoculated, and we know that that's going to take months into this year, I'm not exactly sure yet how we're going to proceed. I do know at least we'll be able to start the planning stages, and different commissioners will be handling different counties of the state. You know, so we'll be able to at least go in, see what types of offerings they have, what we can do along with cultural affairs for the state, and just at least start planning. I'm happy to at least be able to be in the planning stages.
I wanted to actually take a call. Oh, he went away. I'm sorry. We had a caller who had some thoughts about that. Okay. So I wanted to ask both, I wanted to ask you, Tracy, how this has affected your creativity, because you're a musician, but is it difficult to create music, or have you gone in other directions as a result of that?
Well, my band and I have a band, The Art of Jazz, with Tracy Whitney. We went on and started recording. So we've recorded music for an EP, and we're going to be re-recording the vocals. And that was really good for me because it had just been months and months. And because of the pandemic, I'm in negotiations. And it's been really kind of brutal, because usually I'll have negotiations, union negotiations with, you know, with an individual orchestra, you know, maybe one this year, maybe another one in a different year. They're never at the same time. Right now I've been negotiating health and safety protocols for the musicians, for all of my all of my orchestras, and it's been nonstop. I've been working harder in this last year than I've ever worked. It's been nonstop, and it's really draining, because you're trying to make sure that your musicians are protected. You know, so my job right now is to protect my musicians. That's my job, and that's my focus. That means that the last thing on my mind right now is trying to figure out how to do streaming, because I've got, like, my work is just really kind of overwhelming. Mm-hmm. For me as a musician, the, you know, streaming is not something that has really appealed to me, because I get so much energy from my audience. You know, it's really hard to look into a camera.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not getting the energy back. I'm a lifelong performer. I've been performing since I was 11 years old. So, you know, for me, I really need that energy. I need the back and forth of the live people. But so for me, performing right now is not really something I'm doing, because I'm working so hard protecting mm-hmm. musicians.
I wanted to, we had a listener email, my wife and I are classical musicians living in Albuquerque. We have not worked since March. Some of the groups we work with have made it clear that our safety in returning to work is a priority. It's possible to return to playing in an orchestra together safely, but there are many logistical challenges. Until the state loosens restrictions on mass gatherings, there's no way it can be done economically. I also want to go to a caller, Armando, who has played music in Albuquerque for 43 years, because he said he has some ideas about how it will come back.
Good morning.
Hey. And what are...
Hello, New Mexico.
Hey, Armando. So how do you think live music will come back?
Well, it's hard to say. It's hard to picture. I think, you know, I play with a band, Wagogo, for the last 27 years. A lot of world beat music.
Mm-hmm.
Some of my favorite music out of Zimbabwe, out of Colombia, those styles of music, it seems like they were born in the neighborhoods. It's neighborhood music. So people were playing for their community, you know. And I just picture it coming back that way first before we can go back into crowded venues.
That's a good point. It's actually a lot of what Neil was doing this summer with the driveway concerts, with amp concerts. So, yeah, thanks, Armando. Appreciate it. I have Maria Erin Jones right now on the line, and she is founder of ABQ Zine Fest and the Tannic Space in downtown Albuquerque. Hi, Maria.
Hello. Good morning.
So Tannic was a gathering place for independent musicians and artists, really kind of very small, very intimate, for very kind of up-and-coming folks. Why are these kinds of spaces so important in our cultural life here?
Well, I think they're important because, just like you said, they give lots of people opportunity to perform. It's low risk in that they can try the things that they've been thinking about in their heads and not risk anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of exciting to hear experimental music and things like that. And I think spaces like the Tannic, small spaces, are kind of the future of live performance, where we're, the rooms are more intimate. And for me, that feels safer in the current pandemic.
This, you know, you've been working so hard to keep this going, booking events, bands on top of your regular work. This enforced downtime has been a big shift for you, I'm sure. What are you thinking now in terms of the future of what you'll do as an artist and as a facilitator for other artists?
Well, I mean, it has been a time of decompression. You know, I realized how fast I was moving, you know, to try to make sure that Botanix was available to people who wanted to play. I tried to answer every email. I tried to book shows and curate as much as possible, but it did kind of, you know, grind me down. So kind of a benefit, if there is any, of this pandemic is just to have a moment to slow down and decompress. I would like to see the Botanix continue in the future. We know it has its sweet spots. The spring is great, you know, with the roll-up door, and not everybody has to be inside the room. So I'm kind of hoping that, you know, when things are safe for us to gather again, that we'll take advantage of a space like the Botanix, you know, that has a roll-up door, that has a patio, you know, that has a driveway, you know, all those things to kind of incorporate safety and ease and still kind of physically distant. I think that's going to be with us for a while.
How do we make sure we have these spaces like Botanix, these DIY spaces in cities, that they can thrive?
I think we continue to support them. And, you know, I want to say, you know, thanks to everybody who continues to support the Botanix in every way that they do. And I think, you know, small DIY underground spaces are needed. It's the flora, you know, in a culture. It's the yeast, and it helps larger venues kind of continue to thrive as well. So we do need small, independent, underground spaces where people can try things out.
I really appreciate it, Mara. We hope the Botanix comes back as well. Our final guest is Rahim Alhaj. He's a virtuoso oud musician and composer from Iraq. He has made Albuquerque his home for the last 20 years. Rahim, 2020 was supposed to be a really big year for you.
I know. Thanks, Megan, for having me. Yes.
Touring all over the world.
Yeah. I mean, 48 concerts worldwide from Europe to New Zealand, Australia, Russia, and of course the United States, and always in the Middle East. So it was like 48 concerts for last year, and I'm still hoping that one time and one day we will go back to normal, which is means go to live concert and. Mm-hmm. Connect with your fan, connect with your friend, and play your music and play your project. It's been difficult and frustrating, to be honest.
You were going to premiere new work. You were going to travel all over the world. You were going to have your annual concert you have in Albuquerque celebrating your new home here. And it was your 20th anniversary coming from Iraq to here. What has this been like emotionally for you?
Oh, God. It was really devastating. In fact, I was supposed to be in St. Petersburg in Russia. I'm premiering my concerto with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra, St. Petersburg. And so I came back, and then I'm lucky I didn't go. But it was really difficult and emotionally sad because it's big deal for me as in personal level. Because every year in March 21st, I go to my home, I call it Outpost Performance Space, and I do concert. And this time, actually, I invited tons of new musicians around the United States in my home to New Mexico. Invite them from Otmar Liebert to Bill Frisell to David Philberg and String Quintet, my trio with Surana Sifat from Iran. I mean, all the musicians I've been collaborating and writing music for them in the last 20 years. And I said, and my friends, of course, like Megan, like all of you, they come to our spot. And then here we go. It didn't happen. And when Tom was on the call, Rahim, what do you think? We can make it like separated. And I said, no, I mean, it would be really dangerous and it's not pleasant, and, you know,
yeah.
Because the idea is, like, the musician is not just to be safe as you as a musician, but you need safety to the audience, to your friends and your fans. They can come and sit in Outpost and or Bob Joy or whatever.
Yeah,
that we are usually play to be at least comfortable, and that's what's really bummer about it.
Yeah,
so I'm hoping that one day we need to make sure that it's collective effort. To be honest, I mean, we have vaccine, and we need to be more aware and diligent about wearing masks and wash our hand and be responsible about our community to mm-hmm. be safe. And if it's not this collective effort, I don't think so is going to work. Because if you think about scientifically, we need to vaccinate all the 70% of the people, population.
Well, Raheem, we hope you come back to We Miss Seeing You Live. We are almost at the end. I want to take two quick calls very quickly. Suzanne in Albuquerque. You said we need to change how musicians are paid for streaming.
Yes. Good morning. I'm so glad to hear from Tracy Whitney and, you know, the commission and just all the wonderful local musicians. I don't think it was that good before the pandemic. It's just really frustrating because, you know, other countries subsidize their musicians. I mean, Canada subsidizes their musicians. The streaming, we just need a way, way better way of earning money. You can't sell CDs anymore. The streaming, they don't pay well enough. Does anyone have any ideas for how we could really, you know, get musicians not to have to be the poverty stricken, you know, martyrs all the time?
Well, we're almost at the end. I'll give Neil the opportunity to say a quick, if he has any thoughts on that.
On that in particular, that's a whole topic all of its own, the whole model of the business.
I'm going to do an Amy Goodman, like, solve that in 10 seconds, because then we got to go. no, I mean, I know you're trying. You've worked really hard to get musicians paid, Neil. And do you have, we don't have time to talk as much about, there's some links on our website. You can look at the Save Our Stages Act that passed, but this does have a ray of hope, yes?
Well, but that's an interesting thing, because the Save Our Stages is all about, the lobbying came from NEVA, an independent venue association. So it's all about saving the infrastructure, and maybe there is trickle-down benefit to artists, and obviously the infrastructure is important for artists, but that bill is not going to directly finance artists at all. The only benefit for artists will be like the one-time payout that everybody is seeing.
Yeah.
So they're still in kind of a risky place, and even the unemployment had to change somewhat
for the gig workers,
the gig economy workers to even qualify. That was one of the things I thought was really scary at the beginning was in the first couple of months, it was unclear if mm-hmm. working musicians had any kind of support network. There was no safety net for them because the freelance workers were not eligible for unemployment.
Well, unfortunately, that's all our time today. We thank everyone who called. I'm sorry we didn't get to all your calls. You tweeted us your thoughts and questions. Thanks to our guests, Neil Copperman, David Feldberg, Maria Aaron Jones, Raheem Alhaj, Tracy Whitney, and Lara Manzanares. Keep the conversation going. Share your thoughts on Twitter with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. On Facebook, you can search for KUNM Radio or email letstalk@kunm.org. If you missed part of the show, you can stream it online at kunm.org or by subscribing to our podcast. Our engineer today was Mario Spencer. Kaveh Movahed screened your calls. Taylor Velasquez live tweeted the show. Our producer was Ty Bannerman. I'm Megan Kamrick, and this is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM live from the University of New Mexico.